Hello, and welcome to episode number 147 of SMART, which, as we all know, stands for...
SHIELD Mega Agents Resent Time Shenanigans.
Ooh.
Yes.
Resent is a little bit of a... Sounds a little too weak.
Yeah, I know, but I couldn't find...
Mildly Inconvenienced doesn't fit the acronym, though, so...
Exactly.
So I am Redinger Q Podcaster, a.k.a. Trevor.
Hi.
And you are...
Julia Guglia of Internet Fame, dash podcaster.
Correct.
Hey. That was a great intro.
Thank you.
Would you like to do the news now?
I'd like to, but unfortunately, I cannot.
Why not?
There was no news this week.
What? No news happened.
Everyone's still asleep in their comfy, comfy beds. No, there's no news. So we need to move straight on to comics of the week.
Okay.
What was your comic of the week?
So this week I picked New Superman. I think it was issue number 22.
It was.
Yay, good for me. So this week's issue was just a rompin' fun good time. So... Picking up from last time, which I picked last time's issue for one of my comics of the week as well. We have the Korean refugee at this point, who turns out to be a superhero and is the Aquaman analog. And he's dealing with figuring out what his mission is, figuring out his own origin, and fighting for his freedom at the same time that he's being pursued by the Chinese Green Lantern Corps, and the Justice League of China is also being pursued by the Lantern Corps for harboring a fugitive from justice and from the law or whatever. It was just really fun to see all of these characters like battling it out, and the revelation at the end is that the mission that the Korean Aquaman has is not as great as you would want it to be. I'm trying not to spoil it too much, but yeah, it was very exciting. So the whole thing was just top to bottom really fun, exciting, and you also see romantic hints between Wonder Woman and Batman, which are adorable in any way, shape, or form. And you also see the Superman become all white and balanced. He reaches a new level of his chi, and there's this panel where he's flying, standing up with his arms crossed in front of him, and she says, "Are you flying that way? You look like a jerk." It is just full of comedic moments, but also really action packed and really fun and full of twists and turns. And it was a really great read, so that's why I picked it.
Yep, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. What'd you pick?
I picked Justice League of America number 28.
Ooh.
This one was a lot of fun too. So the team is in the distant, distant past trying to protect the god of superheroes, god, I suppose, whose arrival on Earth sort of planted the idea for superheroes in the universe, mm-hmm. from Kronos, who's basically doing whatever he can to screw with Ryan Choi, the Atom. And yeah, so I mean, there were a lot of good moments in this issue for a lot of the different team members. The Ray got some cool moments, and nice. Black Canary and Batman and Aztec got to do her thing a little bit. And I don't know, I also like the whole idea. It's kind of a Grant Morrison-y kind of idea, actually, which is perhaps not surprising because it's Steve Orlando writing it and he's a big Grant Morrison fan, as particularly his JLA run. But the idea that there's this prototypical idea of superheroes. Mm-hmm. That is, I'm a little surprised actually that it wasn't. I mean, he's supposed to look like the generic template for superheroes, kind of like Superman-esque, but even more stripped down, like mm-hmm. no symbology whatsoever, just like a cape, tights, underwear on the outside, and sort of primary colors. You know, like if you sort of imagine what someone even more basic in the superhero look than Superman could be. It kind of looks like him. Mm-hmm. Grant Morrison tinkered around with that idea a little bit in some of his Final Crisis stuff, where he had sort of like a proto-Superman, which ended up being like our Superman that had gone back in time, of course, because all by way of saying that like our Superman had inspired all superheroes everywhere, which is fitting because Superman was the first superhero. So I'm kind of surprised that Steve Orlando didn't make it in some way tied to Superman, but I think it's supposed to look like a prototypical version of the mm-hmm. Superman outfit, basically. So it's kind of, it has that link there. Like, it looks more like him than it does look like Wonder Woman or Green Lantern or something. So I think that link is still there. But I enjoyed that idea. And so And it seems like it tied in a little bit to the Doom Patrol run we've been reading in a weird way with Danny the Brick and everything. So I don't know. I didn't expect to see that in there, but yeah, it's just I've enjoyed this arc. It's been a lot of fun. Of course, this title is ending soon because all the Justice League titles are relaunching. So I think there's maybe one or two more issues after this, and then that'll be the end for this series.
Wow.
But some of the characters are carrying on to some of the... I mean, obviously, we'll see more of Batman, but a lot of these characters are going to be in the No Justice miniseries, and then a lot of them will find places in some of the new Justice League teams, so...
Yeah.
We'll keep seeing them in various places.
It's a lot of people in one book. It's definitely enough to spread around in multiple books after this. That's cool.
Yay. Should we move on to your quiz?
I am ready.
So this week, I'm going to be quizzing you about altered timelines in DC Comics.
Oh, boy.
So I'm going to name a person or event or something.
Yep.
And you need to tell me what it used to be and what it was changed to.
Okay.
Basically, you need to give me like two versions of that. So like if you just look at, say, this, take the, you know, the Batman movies as an example. Or if we were talking about like the, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a good example. But if we're talking about the TV shows, and I were to say Cisco's brother,
right?
You would say, well, it used to be like a anguished pianist who got his hands frozen by Captain Cold, but then after history was changed, he died in a car crash or whatever the thing was after Flashpoint, right? Where he was dead and Cisco blamed Barry for it. So they're all going to be something like that, except less obscure.
Right.
Okay. And in some cases, there'll be a lot of different versions for you to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
Do you That's understand?
True. Yes.
Okay. So number one.
Yes.
Barry Allen's mother.
Dead, not dead.
Can you be more specific?
In the Flashpoint timeline, Barry Allen saved her from the day that she died when he was 9 years old and set him on the path of trying to free his father and becoming a forensic scientist and being in the laboratory to become the Flash in the first place. So, dead, not dead. So when he saved her, he changed all of that from happening, and she was not dead.
Right. If you'd been even more, I mean, you didn't really describe very much the dead scenario, but I know that you know
she got
killed by Reverse Flash and all that stuff. But if you had gone even more originalist, you could have said that before Geoff Johns was writing The Flash, his parents never, like, they lived full, normal, happy, free lives. And then when Geoff Johns came on board, he said, oh, no, actually, she had been killed when he was little. So it went from being they're both,
fine,
you know, elderly, happy people still together, to being she was killed when he was little, to being she was alive again because Barry saved her, and then back to being dead again.
Yep. Yes.
Okay. Well, I'll give you that one. Okay. Number two, the Wayne's killer.
Oh, so in the movies, one of the...
Well, the movies aren't really, I guess you could do that. I'm talking more about like the comics, right? Because the movies aren't an altered timeline from the comics.
Okay,
the movies
are
their own separate thing.
For, at first there was, it was anonymous. Nobody knew who killed him. And then it was
right,
this
the
guy
hacker,
named...
The hacker group Anonymous was responsible for the death of the Waynes.
Yes. No, it was just some nameless thug, some nameless mugger. But then they, in other versions of the story, they ascribed it to
Julian Assange.
They ascribed it to Joe Chill.
Right.
And so the mugger now had a face and a backstory, to dive into.
And then that actually went back and forth at least one more full time. Originally there was no name. Not that he was supposed to be some great mystery or anonymous. It just wasn't important.
Right.
Because it was the 30s.
Right.
And then they eventually named it Joe Chill. And then it was that he'd been put up to it by Lou Moxon, the crime boss. And that, but it was still Joe Chill that did it. And then after Crisis on Infinite Earths and Batman Year One, it went back to being
anonymous.
Mysterious again.
Mm-hmm.
And then after Infinite Crisis, it was Joe Chill again. And that's still the current status quo, so far as I know. But yes, you basically gave both versions, so that's good.
Okay.
All right. Number three.
Uh-huh.
Clark Kent's superhero debut.
Huh. Am I allowed to reference the movie?
Well, if it is similar to
catches,
what was in the comics.
He catches Lois Lane.
But more high level, not the specifics of what he did, but.
Oh. Okay.
At what stage in his life, one could say.
Okay, so in one version, and I'm kind of shooting in the dark here, because in one version he moves to Metropolis and becomes a superhero, you know, later after traveling the world for like 15 years and I'm sorry, not traveling the world, but like doing a 15-year stint of studies in the Fortress of Solitude to learn about humanity and grow into his powers after leaving the Kent farm. And then in the other version, he, I don't know, does it sooner.
Basically, well, the 15 years passing in a blink of an eye in the fortress thing was just in the movies. What I was getting at is he either became Superman when he moved to Metropolis and made his debut there, or he was Superboy growing up fighting crime in Smallville and in the future with the Legion of Superheroes.
Oh.
That was what I was getting at with what stage of his life kind of thing.
Oh, well.
Oh, no, wait on a sec.
Because the cartoons kind of mashed it together.
The cartoons did mash it. The cartoons did mash it together. I didn't. That's why I didn't mention the cartoons.
Oh, you big evilly. Okay.
Evil there were decades of Superboy and comics. Superboy and the Legion comics that were, you know, wiped away when they said, no, he didn't become a superhero until he moved to Metropolis. I mean, there were 40 years of Superboy stories that then they
So their fix to that was.
And now we don't know what the deal is because we haven't seen the Legion since Rebirth, and there's been no except for Saturn Girl.
I was about to say.
Yeah, but we have no indication of whether she's even met Superman before. We don't know how much of their history is intact again. I'm guessing if they're gonna bring the Legion back, they're gonna have to have it that he was a member again.
Sure.
All right, number four.
Okay.
Superman's greatest love.
Oh, well, in one version it's Lois Lane, and in another it's Wonder Woman.
All right, very good. But specifically, in what version is it Wonder Woman?
Rebirth?
No, Rebirth is now.
Oh.
We're in now. Now.
Oh.
You're looking Kingdom at Come? You're looking at then. Okay. that's a rabbit hole. Let's not go down. No, the New 52 is what I was.
Well, I was going to say that next. I was going to say New 52 next. Actually, I swear, I really was. I just wanted to mess with you by being ultra specific that they were together in
Right,
shouldn't have played that game.
But I mean, I could go down a whole thing about that. Technically, he was married to Lois Lane there, but she was killed by the Joker, and then he kind of settled for Wonder Woman.
He settled for Wonder Woman.
Everybody else had been murdered, either by the Joker or
an immortal wife
or Magog.
I'm too much of a commodity. Nuclear bomb.
All right,
hilarious.
Number five. Are you ready?
Yes.
Number five. Connor Kent.
Connor Kent. Okay. In one version, he's a clone of Superman, and in another version, he's a hybrid between Superman and Lex Luthor.
That's not bad. Technically, that wasn't an altered timeline. That was the fact it was a retcon that he always thought he was a pure clone. Actually, he never thought he was a pure clone, but more for all intents and purposes, and then only later discovered that it was a cover-up, and he was actually half Superman, half Lex Luthor. So retcon is, I would argue, different than like the timeline having been changed. But no, what I was getting at is more, and this is a little abstract, but he used to exist and now he basically doesn't exist anymore. Like nobody remembers him. We saw a future version of him, but nobody knew who he was.
You're talking
so
about
he
that.
Basically has been wiped from the timeline now, so it would seem.
Right.
Although we can only imagine that's not going to last for much longer.
Right, because Tim, Batman Tim.
Future Batman Tim is like, oh yeah, my best friend Connor. And then present Tim was like, wait, who's Connor?
Yeah.
Right. All right. Number six.
So do I get any points for that one?
I guess you get one, because you said that he existed. All right. Or half a point, I guess.
Half a point.
Number six.
Yep.
The JSA's home Earth.
JSA's... What? Who's the JSA?
The Justice Society.
Oh. In one version...
You lose all your points for that question.
Of America, right? Yeah, okay. No, it...
Armenia.
Cool. They need more representation in comics. Let's see. I would say Earth Prime is in one version, and then Our Earth is in another.
Our Earth?
Are we Earth Prime?
It depends on which version of the multiverse you're talking about.
Oh.
Technically, we are. Technically, we are Earth Prime, but after 52, Earth Prime became Earth 33. It's just Earth Prime is another thing to call it, kind of like how you could call Earth Zero, the main Earth, New Earth. It's very confusing.
Yeah.
But no, technically neither of the things you said were correct, because Earth Prime is our Earth, and as far as I know, the Justice Society doesn't exist out there on our Earth. No, they originally, you know this, you've just forgotten. Originally, the Justice League and all those characters were on Earth 1.
Okay.
And the Justice Society and all those characters were on Earth 2.
Oh.
That's why, you know, in the show, when they introduced Jay Garrick, later right. turned out he wasn't the real one, but, oh, here's the Flash from Earth 2, which is, you know, one Earth over or whatever, right? That's sure. the way it always was, because that was simplest.
Yep.
But then, after Crisis on Infinite Earths and the multiverse didn't exist anymore, the JSA was retconned to having always been on the main Earth, Earth 1, or whatever yes. you want to call the new lone surviving Earth. It's just that they were, you know, super old because they'd been around during World War II. So it went from Earth 2 to, you know, only Earth. Or Earth 1, if you want to call it that. Or Clutter Earth, whatever you
oh,
want to call
it. Oh, I see. Okay.
You understand?
So,
this is all very
Earth
confusing.
1 older superheroes versus Earth 2 contemporary to our Justice League.
Right, but they were still always older because they'd still always fought on Earth 2. It's just the time kind of worked differently on Earth 2 or something. So they weren't as old as they should have been having fought in World War II. But they were always portrayed as being like slightly
older.
10 years older than the Justice League heroes.
Okay.
But then when they moved them over to our Earth and they kept them locked to World War II, they had to come up with increasingly elaborate explanations for why they could still be fighting crime even though they were like 100 years old.
Okay.
So they're like, oh, the Starheart kept Alan Scott young and the Speed Force kept Jay Garrick young and Wildcat has 9 lives and everybody else got bathed in Carcool's life-rejuvenating radiation one time in the 40s, including their significant others, which is why their wives and kids can still be young also, and they had to keep their, you know...
Hilarious.
That's why the rolling timeline doesn't really work if you've got some characters locked to a specific event in time, unless history. You're going to have them yeah. be frozen in ice for, you know,
from
back in the day until, you know, now, like they do with Captain America. Now can be whenever. It's just yep. you went from being frozen in ice for 10 years to being frozen in ice for like 70 years. You yeah. know? All right. Yep. Number 7.
Uh-huh.
The Amazon's methods.
Methods?
Methods.
Dude, as pertaining to what? Their methods of cooking? Their methods of fighting? Their methods of boat making?
Cilantro versus... No.
Mm. Cilantro is the immortal spice of the gods.
No, Amazon methods. So like next day versus, you know, fresh. No. no, their methods of maintaining their numbers, one could say.
Oh. Oh, in
you
one
can understand
version
why I was trying
yes,
to be circumspect about it because now I've basically given it to you.
No, I... Methods is a very strange way to put
I know,
it.
But how else would I...
existence.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how no. much rape?
Yes. The existence, I suppose.
The existence
no,
of
No, that's how
what?
I would say it. That's how I would phrase it instead
well,
of methods.
Well, I suppose. All right, so anyway,
methods,
give me
yeah.
your answer.
Okay, so you've already said it. One version was, you know, rape. They
rape
would
of
go
whom?
Out. They would go out and, you know,
describe
find
this
find
rape
some
in
fellas.
More details.
They would go out and find some fellas and
seafaring,
yeah, the seafaring like
fellas,
mm-hmm, seafaring fellas, and get it on with them,
and then
come back and
well, no, you're missing a couple of steps.
There's a whole impregnating thing.
And then murder them.
Oh, there's that whole murder thing. Yeah.
And then bring the female offspring back with him to Themyscira and dump the male offspring on Hephaestus to raise in his dark troll cave.
Yep.
Remember,
dark troll cave. The what is it?
It's almost, hard
Bromazons.
It's almost hard to believe they didn't think that status quo would stand the test of time.
Yeah.
And once the character became more popular in the mass market.
And then the other version of the Amazons was just eternally immortal. So
right, which does raise the question occasionally of, you know, you see them get attacked every so often
mm-hmm.
by whoever, and you're like, shouldn't their numbers have slowly or thousands of years have dwindled?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the crew of
yeah,
Voyager,
they don't
right?
win
it's like the crew of Voyager, where they start off with 150 people and they lose someone on average every couple of episodes, and yet they still have roughly 150 people. It's like, how is that? We're not supposed to worry about that,
yeah,
I guess.
No.
All right, last question.
Yep.
Founding Justice League members. I know this is your favorite topic, as per last week.
Founding
oh, Justice
man.
League members.
Okay, well, okay. I don't even remember who it was last time. So, in one version,
all,
the Magnificent... It's
the
all
answer,
a blur.
Correct, the correct answer has always been the same. It's just that you either do or do not remember it.
It's true. So, in one version, it was... am I supposed to be naming the 7?
You don't have to name all. What's the aspect that changed?
Cyborg is a new addition.
Right, replacing who?
Replacing... I think it was Hawkman.
No, that's what you said last time, too. No,
who was it?
Martian Manhunter.
Martian Manhunter, there you go. Yeah, that's the guy.
That's the guy.
So I got half of that one, too.
And you could have, there's a lot more you could have gone into there. Like after, do you want after me to that. Go? Do you want me to go down the rabbit hole or
I'm
not?
I'm sure
how
there
much
are
do you
many
care?
Of our listeners who do.
No, I don't think there is. I mean, the original 7 were always the original 7 up until Crisis. And then after Crisis, they said that Wonder Woman had not been a founding member because she's just debuting now, so she can't have been there for the founding. So they put Black Canary in her place as a founding member.
Oh,
and they also said that Superman and Batman, because the editors of those specific lines wanted to kind of keep the characters to themselves. They didn't want them associated with the Justice League history, particularly Denny O'Neill with the Batman stuff, felt that Batman never really worked. This seems antiquated now, but you can kind of see how in the 80s, especially around the time of the Tim Burton movie, the Batman editor might have felt like Batman, as we're currently portraying him, doesn't really work in a big, colorful team environment. So Superman and Batman had always been like associates of the League and had helped them out, but had never really been official members.
Right.
So the founders went from being the Big Seven to being just Flash, Green Lantern, Aquaman, Martian Manhunter, and Black Canary.
Right.
Because Wonder Woman wasn't there. And then eventually they changed it back to the original Seven again. And then in New 52... Cyborg replaced Martian Manhunter.
Right.
And hopefully this will all get cleared up again in the future. I wouldn't mind if they said, because now it doesn't really make much sense, because now with the John Kent factor, superheroes, like Superman's debuted like 15 years ago. And so like did the Justice League also debut 15 years ago, which would mean that Cyborg is like in his 30s, which it doesn't seem like he's being written as.
Mm-hmm.
Or did the Justice League debut 15 years ago with the original lineup and what used to be in the New 52, the 5 years ago founding of the Justice League with Cyborg there, was just like the team reforming to fight Darkseid instead of like the Apalaxians and Starro and everything. So we'll see if they clarify that. But anyway, you got some number of points there.
Yeah, I got a whole bunch of partial credit. So I think out of 8 questions, I might have wiggled out 5.
That might have been the most nitpicky, geekiest quiz I've ever given you.
That was hardcore. And I think that was maybe the first time you've quizzed me on comics that we're reading instead of shows that we watch.
I don't know about that. I think I've probably done that before.
Huh. Well, maybe.
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 Should we move on to our shows?
Yes, ready.
Okay, so this week we are talking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Krypton, Gotham, Flash, Black Lightning, Legends of Tomorrow, and Arrow.
That's a lot of shows.
A lot of shows.
Spoilers, hear ye be warned.
Yep. Right. So Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., this one was fun.
Tremendous.
Not sure I have a lot to say about it. It was called The Honeymoon. So you've got Simmons and Fitz and Yo-Yo off on their caper adventure.
Yes.
Then you've got, let's see, what are the other threads? So you've got Coulson and Talbot get picked up pretty early on by Daisy and the others.
Mm-hmm.
So then you've got Coulson and Talbot, and I guess you've got more in the case of this episode, Daisy and Talbot having a couple of scenes together, right?
Right.
As he's recuperating. And then you've got, what's the name of the daughter, the blonde killer
Ruby.
Daughter Ruby, that's right. All I could think of was the actress's name.
What is the actress's name?
Now I can't think of that either. Thank you very much. Dove Cameron, I think. Catherine Dent is the mother and Dove Cameron is the daughter. So in my mind, I was pointing like, is it like Catherine Dove? No, that's not
she
it.
She looks like a dove. That's the funniest. Oh, wow. I've not met many people named Dove. Yeah.
So I was expecting her to kill her mother. I think the show was definitely setting us up to think that, especially when she said, like, you're my one weakness. And you're like, oh, like with the dog. Remember
so
the dog?
I thought so, too.
So
I was like, she wouldn't kill her dog, but she would kill her own mother.
Yeah, so she locks her up instead. It was good. I think we're, so, yeah, and the stuff with Yo-Yo and her arms not working.
That was
kind of a cool twist.
Yeah.
I think the scene with, I don't think anybody really thought they were going to kill Fitz and Simmons, but that scene definitely had like a John Woo-esque last stand kind of thing,
absolutely,
with the slow-mo and the dramatic music and them telling each other they love them and, you know, holding hands as
that
they stand up back to back and fire at the, you know, infinite robot horde.
Very
and
desperado. Very good.
And instead they take out the one guy and they all shut down, because that's the way robots always
That's
work on TV.
No, I mean, no. They made it very clear that this was not due to a connection between all the robots. They all just shut down randomly, and they're trying to figure out why.
No, they shut. I didn't think.
No, they were. They were all trying to figure out why, because Yo-Yo and the same time.
No, hold on. I don't think that's true. Fitz and Simmons didn't understand why they shut down, because they weren't privy to the fact that Yo-Yo had just taken out Ivanov. It was his robot core that was commanding them all.
I know, but they knew that something wasn't going on. In fact, they said maybe it's something that Yo-Yo did, because they knew
which
that...
Yeah, which is correct. It was the fact that Yo-Yo had just destroyed that version of Ivanov, and so all the other robots shut down. It's like in every video game or movie ever, where you kill the boss, and then all the minions just
fall down.
Gonna, oh, no! And like in the Avengers movie, right? They blow up the ship, and all the Chitauri just fall down.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those kind of things, I think.
Mm.
It was a good episode. You have anything else to say about it?
It continues to be exciting. That's it.
Yeah, I'm enjoying the story. There's only three or four episodes left. So I think that they've got, yeah. I think the way they structured the season, I mean, we started the season saying, like, is the whole thing going to be in the future? But I think the way they split it kind of like half and half, as opposed to the thirds that the last season was split into.
Deep cut shot. You think he's going to over under, what's the over under he survives? Or the dramatic death.
I think he survives the season, because I think that Fitz and Simmons are going to have a happy ending. And, well, it's hard to say though.
Right. Because he's not.
I mean, he's like a
he's served his purpose in this
time.
Yeah,
he's like what the Legends of Tomorrow would call like an anomaly. What's the word they use? An aberration?
Yes.
Is that? No, anachronism.
Anachronism.
Or like a time remnant or whatever they want to call it, right? So it's like, if he dies, that's sad, because that means that, you know, their line is going to end in tragedy, regardless of how happy they are in the present.
Sure.
But if they succeed in changing the future, which we all assume they're going to, then he'll never have been born anyway. So does he just disappear, or does he continue to live in the present? But that would kind of be sad too, because then like he'll know that his mother will never exist, or at least not in the same way, because she won't have, because everybody's life experiences will be different. Nothing will be quite the same. Uh-huh. I mean, I wonder if they're going to do like I don't know, they could do like a Terminator kind of thing where we see him, we see like the same actor, but now in the new, it flashes forward 50 years and we see the same actor, but now in like the newer, happier future. So we know that like we'll a version of him will still, not that, oh, he won't exist now because they changed everything. He will still exist. I mean, we'll know it's not really the same guy, really, because generations of experiences will have been different leading up to him. But it'll look like the same guy. So, oh, he's still there. He's just happy now. And like, oh, like John Connor now has a happy family in the park. And there's no, you know. Did you know about that? You know, as big a Terminator fan as I am, but you've seen Terminator 2, right?
Yes.
They originally were going to end with a definitive ending that showed that, because you remember the there was a scene, or was it cut? Because I've seen the director's cut so many times now, but there was a scene with like Sarah Connor playing with
John?
With John in the park, and like the nuclear explosion happens or something, and everybody gets wiped. Obviously, John survives because he's got to survive to lead the resistance, but it was like a dream that she had that she woke up from. I think it might have been cut for the theatrical version. But then in the director's cut, or one version of it anyway, at the end of the movie, they include a scene that shows her, you know, older now in that same park, but with a grown-up John Connor playing with like his kids.
Aww.
And she looks around like, because she knows that like when she has this dream, it always, the nuclear explosion always goes off, but this time everything's fine because they definitively averted Judgment Day. But then it's probably good that they cut that scene out, because then they did many, many more movies after this. It turns out you didn't actually avert Judgment Day again, you know? So part of me wonders if they'll do that. Like they'll show the same set of characters, but now in the newer, happier future. You know?
Yeah.
But some shows, I mean, Star Wars Rebels did something similar.
I think
like
so.
A lot of
they
shows
did that similar montage cuts over at the frame when they were doing the framework, you know?
Yeah, but it'd be a little tricky here, because if you show the definitive happy future of these characters, you're technically showing the future of the movie universe also, which the movie people might not want them to do, because that eliminates all stakes from the movies. In a way that we kind of know that Thanos isn't going to destroy the Earth, but showing that everybody's happy 20 years into the future means that things can only get so bad in the movies, you know? So part of me wonders if they'd be allowed to do that. Anyway, we'll have to see. Krypton.
Yes.
So I really enjoyed this episode too.
Yeah,
I feel like
too.
It's moving faster than I thought it would. So
yeah, agreed.
The thing that characters are moving around, you know, the stakes are getting raised pretty high. It seems like the voice of Rao. I don't know. Why do you think they kept that actor's face? Do you think? Because
I don't know.
We only know like this is only episode 3. Like the only characters we know are the ones that are in the main cast so far.
Right.
If this were like season 6 of a show, it could be a shocking reveal, like a character we thought had died 3 years ago or something. But we don't know anybody on this show yet.
Right.
So unless it's one of the main cast, which doesn't seem possible.
Right.
Then I don't know why they would bother to hide his face. Unless it's going to be a retro reveal, by which I mean like maybe we'll be introduced to a character coming up. You know, we'll get introduced to more new characters over the course of the season.
Right.
To know and like these characters, and then at the end of the season, we'll learn that one of these guys had been the voice of Rao all along and is being controlled by Brainiac, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe we just haven't met that guy and his secret identity yet.
Right.
Or whatever. Maybe, I don't know. But it has pretty big implications if he's now being controlled by Brainiac, because he pretty much controls the entire
planet.
Society.
Yeah.
The scenes with, what do you think of the sequences with the little girl being like taken in by the church? And was it Kem? Kem is the name of the bartender uncle guy, right? The
I
guy
don't
that was looking
know
after
his name.
That sounds right to me.
That sounds
yeah,
because
I can
enough.
Hear her saying Uncle Kem. I think that was it.
Do you remember the girl's name?
No, but I bet you do.
Ona. Yeah.
Ona, okay. So, I don't know, like, I'm looking at that now and I'm like, okay, she's being taken away to spend the rest of her life in like this weird,
And you're all right with this?
Cult that rules the planet and is okay with like sending wave after wave of soldiers into civilian, you know, like, it seems like I like that the populace, especially like the disenfranchised, have an uneasy relationship with the church, where most of them are devout, but they're also like pretty disillusioned about stuff. And so some of them are kind of like grumbling about it, about the current status quo. Yeah. I kind of like that. But so I'm not sure how we're supposed to feel about her being taken in, like, especially when Kem said he would look after her.
Right.
He's rankless. Is he even going to be allowed to see her anymore unless she comes to him, which maybe they're not even supposed to do with any regularity, just walk down in there? I don't know. So, I mean, I'm not sure how he seemed like he was kind of, I mean, I think it's even debatable. And again, like, I'm not the most religious guy, but so to me, maybe I'm just being biased, but it seems like it's not even the most desirable life. Like, maybe she would have been happier, albeit poorer, but maybe happier with like her friends and her extended family in the slums there.
Yeah.
Instead of living some like ivory, I picture her kind of like Simmons in the future of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., right? Where she's like part of this weird collective system where she's not allowed to talk or have her own thoughts or anything. Maybe that's just me projecting my own biases onto organized religion. Hmm. And the stuff with, see what else. So Lyta's going to be executed.
Yep. Or is she?
I kept wondering, why don't they just place the blame on, uses a scapegoat, the female soldier who is already arrested for overstepping her bounds. Exactly. But I think the conceit there is that they needed someone higher up enough.
Yes.
Because if you just like assign the blame to some rank-and-file soldier, it wouldn't go over quite as well.
Yeah. I asked the same question, and that's the answer.
And so Nyssa is going to defend her. I like that. I thought it was interesting, the revelation that she and her father seem like they're working to overthrow the church.
Yeah, that was
so funny. Their motivations are now kind of cloudy, because I think we've been positioned to think of him as being like more on the antagonist side of the show.
Yep.
His role in Seg's grandfather's death, and the way in which he's kind of manipulating Seg's life and forcing him into an arranged marriage and all these other things. But if the church is bad, then I guess that makes him kind of good. I can see it being kind of like an enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of thing. And then Seg gets taken in by Colin Salmon's character there, who we don't know his name, a.k.a. Oliver's stepfather from the first couple of seasons of Arrow. Him. And I thought that they were going to be working with Black Zero.
Yeah, I did too.
Because that seems to be what the military think that he is, that he's involved in Black Zero. Turns out that, at least to hear him tell it, he's kind of using Black Zero for resources while not really aligning himself with their goals. So we don't really know. It seems like it seems like he said as much, that they know about Brainiac and they want to stop it. So maybe it's one of those cases where you see this a lot in RPGs where, I mean, I don't know, this is a ridiculously specific example, but you'll at least know what I'm talking about. Like the Suikoden games, where the main character starts off in a position of privilege, thinking that, and he's been told all his life that a certain group of people are, these rebels, they're bad, right? They're anarchists, they're out to destroy our way of life. But then the character, you know, the scales fall from his eyes, and he learns that the people they were told all their life were terrorists are actually fighting to restore freedom or protect the people, and the society that he grew up in is actually corrupt and evil, right? Mm-hmm. Like all the Suikoden games, the main character ends up joining the side that was...
of the rebellion, you know,
the rebellion or whatever.
The underdogs.
And fighting against their old country that they grew up in. So I wonder if we're seeing maybe something similar here. Like maybe these are going to be more like the good guys, although he murdered his own soldier for tasing Seg. So I mean, that's...
I actually thought to myself,
from a personnel management perspective, probably not thinking long term.
That's
like
what
his,
I'm saying.
Like his Q3 numbers are just going to be really bad. But
that's what I was saying. I was like, the amount of resources TV that it took to train that person. Yeah.
This TV shorthand for this guy is unstable badass, you know? Yeah, so I don't know where all that's going. I thought that was a pretty smart move. Actually, that was a pretty cool. There were a couple of fight scenes that I thought were weirdly staged, and I think that was one of them. Like it was all done. And you see a lot of fight scenes like this, especially on TV, where they don't have a lot of time for rehearsal and everything. But it was all done in quick cuts with no close ups. You know, so like you can tell what was going on, but it just seemed like that was shot really fast, and they didn't. I was like, it's not. It's like this guy throws him down, and a quick cut, and then he stands up and he throws him down. I don't know. They're not the greatest fight scene, but I thought it was kind of a clever
twist,
you know, Chekhov's gun kind of thing of using the little nose spider
bug,
there, putting it up her nose, and so I'm enjoying the series. I think it's picking up it's picking up pace, and it's becoming more interesting as we learn more about the different sides that everybody is on.
Yep.
Gotham.
Yes.
So a lot happened here. So we see, although I guess we've seen it before, so who knows, it could come back again. Although it seems like they've kind of gotten away from the whole Hugo Strange, anybody can be resurrected, because we've introduced the right. idea that Hugo Strange can bring anybody back to life thing. So I think that probably anybody that dies now is probably gone for good. They could always bring Hugo Strange back, but I think I get the feeling that they kind of want to reintroduce more stakes and get away from the fact
and
that everybody
that,
that
was
dead.
And not only that, but they sort of left it nebulous. Back. They said, okay, well, he figured out how to do it with Fish Mooney, but it may not work again.
Yeah, but Jerome was killed. Jerome already was killed and brought back to life, remember?
Yeah, that's true.
He was shot when he was, I forget exactly what it was, but it was a big gala and he was up on stage, right? And somebody like stabbed him. Forget who it was. It was another villain. Oh, it was Theo Gallivan, right? Theo Gallivan manipulated him. Do you remember? Remember who Theo Gallivan is?
Oh, I do remember. Yeah, yeah. He's Sarah
James,
now.
James Frayne's character manipulated him into taking that big ballroom hostage so that he could be the big hero and get himself elected mayor, right?
That's
so
right.
He went up and he stabbed him, betraying Jerome, whom he
yeah,
had put up
right.
to this.
Yep.
And then Jerome was dead, and then he was brought back at whatever the
a
name of the
date.
Whatever hill, Indian Hill, right?
Yes.
But yeah, so it seems like he's gone. It seems like, especially at the end of this episode, we were right in our prediction last week that Jeremiah is going to be mm-hmm. the Joker, or at least the next
proto
version of Joker. Who
right.
knows? They could do another reversal.
He's not a man. He's an idea.
I'm not sure how you do this necessarily on like primetime broadcast TV.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it would have been too dark. But part of me would have wanted to see, or maybe at least have it done off screen, but hinted that it happened, that it was more like what Joker tried to do to Commissioner Gordon
joke.
In The Killing Joke, where he turns him crazy through subjecting him to horrible things and mm-hmm. hurting the people that he loves and physical humiliation and mm-hmm. weird song and dance numbers, right?
Yep.
Whatever. Instead of just gassing him with a specific gas that turns him crazy but not
but
too
just
crazy.
Him, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that seemed a little brief
mm-hmm.
for the mythic origin of the Joker. Like, I like everything they set up. Oh, this was the brother who everybody thought was sane. It turns out he's actually the crazier one.
Right.
I like all that. But then it was just a little sudden, like, oh, one, this guy's dead, but he gassed the other guy.
Right.
I wanted to see him slow, you know? I guess the Joker, maybe I'm being unfair, because the Joker's origin was always that, like, right?
Yeah, he fell into a...
Regardless of what warning signs there were about him before, it was literally, you fall into a thing of acid and you come out and you're the Joker. So
right.
It was always a light switch kind of thing. So maybe I'm just holding it up to the standard of what I hope they were going to do.
Right.
But I thought it would be so cool if we see, you know, this guy who wants his brother to be an even crazier villain than he is,
right.
slowly mold him into that. I thought that would be kind of cool to see, and instead we just got, he left a little present and everything. But
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Was there much else in this one? I think that was most. That was
well,
the main thing.
Don't
right? It was pretty much
Barbara
just
King,
a story. Oh, the
Barbara
Rachel
just,
Gould stuff.
Barbara just, you know, opens up a cavern that hasn't been opened.
Yeah,
and
I buy her subscribing to the Rachel Gould thing
yeah.
just because she seemed like, I'm not sure, this is maybe another instance of the scattershot writing paying dividends later, like, because she's been so all over the place.
Yes.
That it kind of retroactively makes it look like she was searching for direction all along
mm-hmm.
and a true home, and now
mm-hmm.
she's found that. I'm not sure I buy as much her suddenly turning on Tabitha and telling her to get out. I buy her being, like, defensive and protective of this new identity she's gotten, but Tabitha's
yeah.
been, like, the one... Like, she fought
Person
to get her trust
yeah,
back again
exactly.
after, like, attacking her at the end of the previous
yeah,
season.
Yeah, she was willing to let her hand get cut off for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but I enjoyed it.
Me too.
So, The Flash. This one was a sort of a fun
mm-hmm.
one-off episode.
Yep.
I mean, the villain was not supposed to be a huge threat, really, so it's a lot of... It's a reason to get... I'm glad that they didn't do another episode where it's like, oh, Ralph is failing at being a hero because he's scared and
right.
won't take things seriously.
Yep.
Here, it was actually Barry learning a lesson, like, not
mm-hmm.
every... Just to be a hero doesn't mean he needs to be exactly like you. Like, he has his own way of doing things,
right.
and it's a little different, but he gets results kind of thing.
Right,
know?
Exactly.
So, it's kind of like Barry being the... You're off the case, McGonagall, you know?
Yeah,
you're
yeah,
it's
exactly.
a chief, I get results, you know? You can't
yeah, yeah.
can't take away my badge. And, hey, I'm trying to eat lunch here. Like, remember the McGonagall thing from...
Vaguely, I do. Yeah.
Do it for me, Billy. McGonagall. Remember that?
Yeah.
Okay, for you, McGonagall. Well, McGonagall, Billy's dead. They slit his throat from ear to ear. Hey, I'm trying to eat lunch here. Remember? All right.
Simpsons. Oh, my God.
And then the whole thing with, is it just me? Am I crazy? Or did Carlos
yes.
Valdez is a short man, right?
He's short. Sure.
Yet It seems like over the past couple of years, he's taller than everybody else he's playing opposite in scenes. Have you noticed that? I am almost certain that in his earliest scenes with Gypsy, she was taller than him. And now he's But now he's taller than Danny Trejo. Isn't Danny Trejo?
No, he didn't. He's not as tall.
He was taller than Danny Trejo in this episode. Go back to this episode. He was in wide shots. He was standing taller than him. I wonder, are they like putting him on a box or something? Because I don't know. But I could have sworn. Well, sometimes you see stuff like we've talked about this before. It's like another play. If they're playing him more as like a heroic leading man type instead of just the quirky sidekick, they're trying to make. Subconsciously, it's the same reason that you ever do this, right? The same reason that they do it with Tom Cruise all the time is that subconsciously we're trained culturally, especially for men, to equate stature with, you know, fortitude and all these things, heroic potential. So I wonder if they started to, especially in his scenes with Gypsy, where they wanted maybe him to come off as being more of like a leading man type. If they're doing, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. I just could have sworn that in a lot of earlier scenes in the past couple of years, he was like the shortest guy in the room, and now he's taller than some of the other people he's playing against. So either he's growing or they're shrinking. I could be wrong. Anyway, it's just a minor thing. The stuff with Breacher, I mean, Danny Trejo's fun.
He's awesome.
That was kind of like a fluffy, inconsequential storyline. I also am not sure that I buy, I mean, his character is played as more or less just for humor here.
Sure.
I'm not sure I buy the way that the character with the intensity and drive and violent nature that he was portrayed with in his first appearance, just being so okay with suddenly retiring and wearing like Hawaiian shirts and doing whatever.
Well, you know, he's his own person.
I get that it's a comedic inversion of expectations because you think he's going to take his revenge on Cisco and it turns out he's actually happy to be going on vacation.
Yeah.
But that is subverting my expectation, but my expectation is founded on the fact that he seemed like he was a hard as nails badass.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if inverting that works. You know what I did? I completely forgot that this was even a thing in this episode. What I did like was the whole thing with, I can never remember her name, but the Thinker's wife.
Oh, that's right.
Where they do the whole, and we've seen this in Star Trek episodes and other sci-fi before, but with like, we see something happen where a character realizes something and then tries to warn themselves, and we discovered that this is actually like the 10th time they've tried to warn themselves. And they actually do, it's actually done really well because they even hint at it early on with like, oh, someone's been working on this design already. And, and Thinker's like, oh, of course, it was me. I already started. But we realized it was her on the last go around.
Right.
That
exactly.
It, you know?
Her last iteration.
It's like, you know, Heaven Sent in Doctor Who, I guess, would be the best.
Yeah,
right?
With
the 12th Doctor living billions of lives in that one castle, slowly working away the diamond wall and leaving clothes for himself and all those, and those bones piling up in the lake outside and all those cool twists. Yeah, I think that's probably what, no wonder I liked it because it probably reminded me of that. But yeah, I thought that was well done. And I think that, I mean.
I agree.
I don't know. Part of me gets frustrated, but we've talked about this before, gets frustrated with like enabler characters like that. With like, can't you see? Like, come on. Like, haven't you ever seen a movie in your life? Don't you realize that in movies, the characters that are doing the things that your husband is doing right now in front of you are always the bad guys? Like, have you no
awareness,
distance from yourself? So the fact that inevitably she does discover that and like is suddenly afraid of him, but then he's wiping it, or she, I guess now, is wiping it from her wife's mind every time is actually a cool twist. Now it's portrayed as being a more recent thing, you know, so it's not like she slowly realized he was evil, which, you know,
she
maybe
do,
makes
though.
A bit more
it's
portrayed as being
do.
A sudden thing that she realizes in this episode once she realizes what he's been doing to her.
No, it was like one of those last straw things, but she was having a conflicting emotions leading up to this point.
I guess that's true, because there's also the whole dosing her with the weeper's tears kind of thing. We don't really know how long that he's been doing that.
Yeah.
So I guess
he dropped
true.
A couple in her tea at one point. Do you remember there was this one up
in this episode?
No, before.
I don't remember
there
that.
There were hints being dropped that
maybe.
He was going to start
manipulating
her. Maybe,
okay, yeah, all right, I can give them credit for doing that. I hadn't picked up on that. So Black Lightning.
Yes.
This one was really good, too.
Yeah.
The showdown in the school. I'm not sure how I feel about... I've already forgotten his name. Is it Khalid?
Khalil.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how I feel about the fact that they brought his character back like that. Because, again, this is...
I like it. I think it's great.
It was well done. But
I think it was so great.
You recall my bugaboo with this show is that I enjoy the more down-to-earth... street level stuff more than the sci-fi high concept stuff. So the fact they took like this really relatable, like we talked about early on, of course, obviously they had planned to do
lovely,
you know, the fact that we liked how relatable and likable this guy was. And then it was tragic that he got shot and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But now they bring him back and he's like this dart firing supervillain. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like as understandable and relatable as his motivations are, mm-hmm. like, sure, all that's fine. It was well written, well acted. But just, to me, like, I don't, do you kind of see what I'm getting at? Like, if what I like from the show is the more, but you see what I'm saying, right? If
what I like from the show is the more down-to-earth stuff,
you take the most down-to-earth character, arguably, on the show, and turn them into, like, an evil supervillain who's fun. It's a simplification, but who's, like, tearing up
his... He has to pay, but he's under somebody's thumb, you know? He owes now.
I'm not sure, I don't know, like, I feel like they could have done more... He only had a few short scenes, but I feel like they could have done more before he got injured. To hint that his happiness was that fragile, if you see what I'm saying. The way it was written is that he seemed like he had a good head on his shoulders. We talked about this.
Yeah, we did.
It seemed like he knew exactly what he wanted. He was happy with his life. He was comfortable with himself. He had a good perspective on things. Then all of a sudden he gets murdered and he instantly like, not, I'm sorry, he doesn't get
he
murdered.
He didn't get murdered. He gets
paralyzed. Sorry, he gets paralyzed.
Yeah.
Instantly he hates Jennifer, he hates Principal Pierce, he hates the world. Now, I can understand that.
He was going through a grieving process, and it was at that time that Tobias Wendell took advantage of him, so that made perfect sense to me.
I know, but you see what I'm saying. Like, from a character perspective, the through line seems like it might have been going
He's
from...
He's a kid. He doesn't know how to process that level of despair and grief.
I know, but your expectations for dramatic storytelling are... Like, I'm sure people have this kind of turn in real life all the time, but I'm saying when you're watching a story...
Right.
To take a character that was portrayed as so pure and good,
mm-hmm.
and then, so stage one, pure and good. Stage two, paralyzed and angry at the world.
Yeah.
Stage three, evil supervillain. I feel like if that's going to be the arc, you need to either show more goodness in him now, mm-hmm. in the present.
Yeah.
Which they maybe did a little bit here, because he did try to reconnect with Jennifer, but then he instantly turned on her again.
Well, he saw that it wasn't working his way. And
yeah, you either need to hint that maybe he's got, like, a dark side.
I mean, that was his... That was their hint, yeah.
Well, no, but I'm saying, like, either in those first few episodes before he got shot, hint that he's got a little bit of a temper, maybe, or hint that he his ambitions are maybe bigger, like, he's a little too big for his britches or something. Or, in the present now, that he's become a supervillain... Show that he's still redeemable, or that he still cares about. So there's some lines he won't cross.
There are some lines he doesn't want to cross. In fact, going to Garfield, that entire conversation with Tobias Whale while he was eating the steak—that was what you were asking for.
I know, and I could see what they were trying to do there. But to me, it took a 5-minute conversation with this guy, with Tobias Whale, to convince him to like terrorize his friends and his peers and his teachers and the only people that have ever looked out for him, you know? Like, that's...
Well, hang on, because, like, Tobias Whale had to remind him that, hey, man, I will rip that spinal technology out of your back if you don't do what I say.
No, I understand, but I think
that... So, I'm on board.
To me, though, it just seemed a step too far. Like, I have trouble believing that the character, as broadly painted as he was in those first few episodes, because, again, you know, not a major character, only got a few short scenes.
Yeah.
But that guy would take... You know, terrorizing, potentially injuring, or maybe even killing, perhaps only inadvertently, but still, it could easily have happened.
Right.
His friends and his teachers
former
at that school over going back to being paralyzed. Like, that is a big, you know, weighing those things, you know? Like, I think both of us would agree that most good people would be willing to not walk again rather mm-hmm. than kill their friends, right?
Right.
And so... If you look at it from that, you know, real world perspective, it seems a little far to take him that way. Mm-hmm. And not that I didn't think it was, you know, told well, but to me it's like, and so having him be the physical threat in this episode was a little jarring for me, just because I'm not sure I fully bought his turn to villainy. Now, if they redeem him at the end, like have him sacrifice himself or whatever, I guess that retroactively makes it a little better. But even so, like, I feel like the damage has been done, where he's already committed these acts now, these unjustifiable acts.
Right.
And so I feel like, maybe if they'd done a bit more to set up that Whale was threatening him, not just with removing his spinal thing, but also was threatening to, like... I mean,
kill
maybe
his
it's
mom
implied.
Or something.
I mean, you certainly believe he'd be capable of it, but was threatening to kill his mom. Or it's like, if you don't do it, I'll just send in 50 guys with guns and everybody will die. And so it's the lesser of two evils if I do it. And I don't know. I feel like they could. Anyway, we probably spent enough time on that. But yeah, so now... Well, obviously, we didn't think that Jefferson was going to die, so Jennifer brought him back.
Mm-hmm, that was awesome.
I wondered if she was going to step into that room when Nyssa was fighting
the
henchwoman.
That she didn't. You know why? Because two things. Number one, Nyssa definitely could have kicked that skinny lady butt right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, but the thing, the advantage of Jennifer is that she could just zap her from across the room.
Yeah, that's true. But
every time, every time Thunder brought her powers, the lady had no defense against
it. That mercy analog is not going to, you know, stay down for long, and therefore, if she sees Jennifer has powers, it's really bad news for Jennifer and everybody else too. So she can't really expose herself in any way, shape, or form.
She could reach her hand into the room and zap from across the room.
That's what I was. I had that same thought too. But it's really good also from Jennifer's story arc perspective. Like, she's not ready to control her powers in a high tense situation. She maybe even appreciates what her father and sister do now better.
It was probably an important step in her arc. If she immediately stepped up to fight people, then that might have been a bit too far. But I feel like what you're saying is what we saw in this episode is that we saw her gradually realize that sometimes there are situations when you need to step up, right? And so at that point,
her powers were handy and she wasn't able to control them. Right. And in a fit of high adrenaline, she was able to bring her father back.
Right.
So it was the first deliberate time that she was able to control her powers and do something deliberately.
Because she has to go from I don't want these powers at all, I want rid of them,
to I can see how they
presumably
can be useful. All right, I can see really.
Well, eventually, fighting crime.
Right.
So at this point, if she realizes, there are going to be times when I need to be able to use my powers and therefore I shouldn't get rid of them.
Right.
At that point, you're really just only separate. She's really only separate from Anissa by a matter of degrees now. Because like Anissa's like, I want to use my powers all the time to help people.
Sure.
And Jennifer will be like, well, sometimes it might be necessary to use my powers to help people.
Right.
Once you've crossed that line of I want to keep my powers and they're important to help people,
you're
really more on the side of Anissa than you are her current side.
Yeah.
You know, like, she's already traveled most of that way. So you're right. They probably needed this intermediate stage. And for extenuating circumstances, you can't really get much bigger than your father is literally lying in front of you with his heart stopped and only you can bring him back to life.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that it took that happening inadvertently for anybody to think of it. Because, like, that's, again, like, have many people ever seen movies or whatever? Like, if you got someone there with electric powers, zap the guy who's dead, right? Like, that's, you know, how many times have we seen that? But it's,
what did you think about the scenes between Jefferson and Lynn? Like, in the beginning, they actually got back together. They're really thinking about seriously
reconciling. I was okay with that because it's been building all season.
That was fine for me. In fact, I thought it was incredibly cute and flirty. But
you're talking about like
the argument scene. It felt a little much.
It felt kind of like it was maybe a little
like CW
melodramatic.
Yes.
But I do.
Like, in all other aspects,
I think I still kind of bought it, though, because it's talked things out. I bought it, I think, because I can understand both sides better than I can in oftentimes in other situations where it seems like characters on these shows are mad at each other for no reason.
Right.
Like, I can understand her as a parent and as a scientist saying, look, there's no harm in learning as much as we can about this. Who knows what will be useful later? And I'm not saying that I will be able to definitely take your powers away or even that I want to, but it doesn't hurt to learn as much as we can about it.
Yes.
I can completely understand that. From Jefferson's perspective, these are his
daughters.
These are his children, and this is who he is, right? Like, he's accepted who he is now more than he ever has before. And it's like, as much as I hate to bring this up, it's like the third X-Men movie, the bad one, or one of the bad ones, the first bad one, when it's like, it's an affront to a mutant's very identity, the fact that there could be a cure out there, the fact that it's being portrayed as a cure,
right,
in the media. It's like, we don't need to be cured, right? We're not sick. There's nothing wrong with us. This is just who we are, right?
Right.
So it's almost an insult to Jefferson, even the idea that it's something that could be fixed, right? Like, whatever word you want to use, cured, fixed, turned off, deleted, repressed, you know, made recessive, whatever you want to call it. The very notion is offensive to him because this is who he is and this is who his kids are. This is something that has brought them closer, ultimately, particularly already at this point to Anissa.
Right.
Something that they share, you know, something that ties them together. So, yeah, I can see. And also, like, all the extenuating circumstances, like, he's obviously under a great deal of stress, right? A lot of other bad things are happening.
Yeah.
Their lives are in
it
constant danger.
It definitely felt CW-ish, but, you know, and it's like, it was this right is on the line.
It's like, this is what you're choosing to prioritize right now? Like, we're literally hiding out. Our lives are in danger constantly, and you're trying to figure out a way to make us less able to defend ourselves?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, so I can kind of understand it. It seemed a little, ever so slightly contrived, but I was still, by and large, okay with it.
Hmm.
So, Legends of Tomorrow. This was the season finale.
This was called
the Good, the Bad, and the Cuddly. Which to me kind of tipped off the ending
a little bit. It kind of saw it coming a little bit. I'm glad I didn't know the title.
I really enjoyed this. That's hilarious. This might have even been like my favorite episode of the season.
I have to say,
I thought this was really good. I'm a sucker for the heroes. You know, they're down and out. Their plan didn't work. They're on the run. But all the friends they've made along, this is usually what you see like at the end of the end of a movie trilogy or a series finale, mm-hmm. right? Where, oh, like all the adventures we had along the way, even though we thought that we were screwing up all the time, it turns out we did a lot of good and a lot of people we saved along the way are going to come to help us in our darkest hour kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like I'm always a sucker for those kinds of stories. So the fact that we see, you know, Jax come back and Kuwasa comes back and she's like part-time vixen now. And, you know, Ava comes back, obviously, and who else will be? Oh, and give me a second. Not Wonder Woman. Helen of Troy, right?
Yes, there you go.
Which is Wonder Woman. Basically in there so they could have a Wonder Woman, right?
Yeah, for sure.
She's like, oh, I learned all this on Themyscira. I'm like, and even her armor a little bit. Like, I get that they were drawing those comparisons in the previous episode,
too. I know that they were... the Amazons are immortal and they have all the time in the world to perfect these various arts. I'm like, what? How long were you there? A year or two max?
Well, we don't. It could have been however long. But I really enjoy it. And then bring everything full circle, you know, having Nora be kind of redeemed and having Ava and Sarah kind of get together. And then the thing with all the totems have to work. And, you know, Rey is looking out for Nora and Jax. The one thing I thought was a little weird is like, because it kind of, if they ever want to use him again, kind of writes his character into a bit of a corner, is that now Jax is much older now and he has a family and a kid.
Yeah, he has, not much older. Well, five years older. That's not
I know,
much.
But it's like if they ever think they wanted, like, they probably didn't think they'd be bringing Roy back on Arrow either.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing that they didn't say that, oh, he went off to travel through time and now he's 10 years old and he has it. Like, you know, you never know when you might want to bring an old regular back for another adventure. So, I don't know. I feel like giving him a happy ending is nice, but it kind of, now you've got to write out of that corner if you ever want to bring him back for another story arc or something.
Add something.
Now it looks like
life.
He's risking his life. Right now, it looks like it's the whole thing that they just did with Martin, which is maybe they want, which is maybe what they were trying to do is to echo that.
Right.
The whole reason why Martin was trying to leave is because he has, you know, he was realizing now that it was unfair to his family. Right. Mm-hmm. So if they ever want to bring Jax back, because now in this episode, even you're like, wait, you have a new baby daughter and yet you're willing to commit yourself to this futile, the seemingly suicidal looking last stand against this huge time demon and this army of. And he's treating it like a big joke, and I get that it's a fun, lighthearted show, but you're like, aren't you worried that you're going to die? Like, he didn't seem like he was invested in the stakes at all, you know?
I didn't even think of it that way, just because of the nature of the show.
Yeah, I know, but when you step back and look at it, like...
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, if this were all somehow rooted in reality, then, yeah, that's an irresponsible way for your father to live.
Jonah Hex is there, too.
Yeah, that was fun.
It was a lot of fun, and the thing with him...
He was flirting with Zuri.
With him and Zuri. Zuri, not Zuri.
Oops.
That was fun too. I wonder if part of me wonders if they'd ever make him a regular. Although maybe they're just enjoying deploying him on a part-time basis.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, and then at the end we get they beat Malus with more Malice, as it turns out, we're supposed to have been pronouncing it with a huge. They do the Voltron / Power Rangers thing and become a huge Bebo and destroy it. So I guess Damian Dark is dead again now, or at least destroyed, disintegrated, something.
Yeah, seems like.
I mean, I guess as ridiculous a way out, a way to go out as that was, you know, basically being disintegrated by a huge stuffed toy.
Yeah.
And like a giant kaiju battle in the
Did
old
you
west.
You notice the reference to Ghostbusters?
Oh, was there like a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man reference there?
Yeah, there was, because
maybe I
couldn't help
of
it. I couldn't help but think of it, and everybody's angry at him.
Well, they're all trying to think.
Yes.
Well, they're all trying to think of No Thoughts.
Exactly.
Yeah. But as ridiculous as a way as that is to go out for his character, I feel like they did kind of give him an arc there at the end. So if we don't see him again, outside of like maybe like a little fun cameo here or there if in the past, if this is the last we see of like main present Damian Dark.
Right.
Although he's died like 3 times already, so who knows?
Yeah.
But I feel like it's not a bad way to go out, you know? Like, they humanized him at the end. He sacrificed his own life so that his daughter could not become an evil time demon.
Mm-hmm.
Then he went out destroyed in the Old West by a giant blue furry creature.
That's beautiful.
That's the way we all want to go out, really.
There's dying in your sleep, and then there's being disintegrated.
Suplexed by a giant stuffed toy in the Old West. The ultimate fate.
Mm-hmm.
So Arrow.
Uh-huh.
Arrow this week was called Fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed this one. This is the kind of thing that could have been really contrived, where Oliver decides to get back to basics at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, realistically, at this point, since he's lost everybody else, that really just means Felicity isn't going to sit in that chair anymore. That's really the only concrete difference, I suppose. Unless he goes back to the old suit, which I don't see them doing. I don't, you know, like, I get symbolically why he wore it in this episode.
Right.
But I don't think they would do that for any number of reasons. So it's not as big a change as it would have been if he'd come to this decision a year ago, where he would have had to fire, like, six people, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like that's the kind of thing that, no, I have to do this on my own from now on. It would, particularly from him, when we've seen him, like, regress as often as we have, I feel like it could have come across as contrived, but the way in which it was set up in this episode and really all season, and the way in which he expressed it at the end, it wasn't with any, it was like the same way that I liked the way that Diggle expressed himself to Oliver last week, where it's like, look, I'm not even mad, mm-hmm. right? You've become a better person. It's just I can't travel down this road with you anymore.
Right, because I can't be my best
and
self.
He even said it here. It's like, I think I have changed, right? Like, and I don't want to give up the mayor if it turns out I don't get impeached. I'm never going to give up you or William.
Uh-huh.
And so, but I do feel like I need to make some kind of change because maybe John had a point. And so the one thing I can do is try to, like, when I'm the Green Arrow.
Just focus on that.
It's a minor thing. Why do they have to call him the Green Arrow all the time? That always sounds really clunky to me. In the comics, he's never the Green Arrow. You say the Flash a lot of times, yeah. But you never say the Green Arrow in the comics. It's always just Green Arrow. I don't know why they do that. It makes it sound more important, I suppose, like the Batman. But I don't know. It was never the Green Arrow. Right. One time in this episode, someone said Green Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Diaz. Just say Green Arrow and not the Green Arrow. It sounded mm-hmm. fine. It sounded great. Like, I don't know why they don't do that. But anyway, so like, yeah, like he has objectively, like, things have gotten worse.
Yep.
And it's not really his fault, but he's like, maybe I could have done things better if I just kept my eyes on the prize a bit more when I'm in the suit. You know? And
right.
And even when he said, like, I need to keep these aspects of my life separate. Right? Because it has gotten super muddy, right? Like, everybody he works with in City Hall, like, Quenta was there and Thea was there, right? Mm-hmm. Like, everybody that he works with in City Hall knows he's Green Arrow. Everybody, and half the people that, and then Renee was there, right? As, like, Quentin's assistant or whatever,
assistant,
right?
Yeah.
So it's like he's working with the same group of people in the bunker and in City Hall, and mm-hmm. they all know who he is. And half the time when he's in City Hall, characters are talking to him about Green Arrow related stuff. And half the time when he's right. in the bunker, people are talking to him about mayor related stuff. And it's, you know, it can be hard to, you know, keep your mind on the mission when everything is always, you know, so mixed up. So I can kind of see I made it work. And the idea of having Prometheus there to basically taunt him through the whole episode. And I'm glad they didn't do the thing where he's off the vertigo but he can still see Prometheus. Like, oh, he was just crazy the whole time.
Yeah,
it was never
right.
the drug. Like, I'm glad they didn't do that. But that was smart because he, I don't know. Like, it's not really him. So when mm-hmm. he says, you know, maybe I was wrong and you have changed, but yada, 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 you can't really say that, oh, you know, Prometheus finally admitted that Oliver is capable of change, because it's not really him. It's just
right.
like what Oliver is imagining Prometheus would say, I guess.
Right.
But because of what he was pushing Oliver to do and the things he was always saying to Oliver, he was the perfect, you know, like, ghost of Christmas future or whatever, or devil on his shoulder, whatever, to, like, taunt him and guide him through this episode to the point where he was.
That was a good framing device for this discussion, for lack of better. Yeah,
and
I liked it very much.
So I think that was as well done. And, you know, they had things where they had him see other things, and they had him see, you know, real Laurel and, you know, Renee in the hospital and a bunch of other things.
And Felicity telling him he wants a separate.
Right, which I didn't even retroactively realize that was supposed to be a drug-induced thing until she said that wasn't her. I'm like, oh, I just thought that he was taking it really hard and maybe, like, exaggerating what she said
right.
to him. It turns out it didn't actually happen, so I didn't quite get that at the time. Yeah, but I think also it's got to be temporary, right? I mean, they're not going to have none of these other characters fight crime with him anymore.
Right.
Like, even Dinah, Renee, and Curtis being off on their own
they're
is probably temporary.
Team. Right.
Probably temporary. And
I think so.
And I don't think that, well, I mean, can they
it
really
could easily be a status quo for at least a season?
But what are they going to do with Felicity now? She's going to be working at her company and looking after William at home, and Diggle is going to be off doing completely unrelated stuff at Argus.
Mm.
It's not sustainable. I think they've got to bring the team back together you know, if not by the end of this season, then next season.
Yeah, I could see what you mean.
I do wonder about the mayor thing, though. I'd be sorry to see that. I mean, they got more out of the mayor thing than I thought they would. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, it's going to be a one season thing, you know, which is too bad because there's so many stories you could tell. If they end up him having been mayor for two seasons,
mm-hmm.
I feel like that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But part of me would hate to lose that because it is such a unique thing that, I mean, it's from the comics, yes, but it's like not, well, I can't think of any other superheroes that have held public office. I mean, Barbara Gordon was a senator for a while in the comics or something, but I mean, to have a character be the mayor of the city and yet a vigilante at the same time is such a unique thing that I would have liked them to have maybe continued that so that when the show ends, he goes out right on top as still being the mayor. Whereas if he's impeached and removed from office now, they can't really do that unless he retroactively clears a name and wins re-election in a landslide or something, which they could do. I mean, mm-hmm. I guess that would be believable. But because they haven't really shown him doing a lot of mayor stuff that's not directly related to fighting the villain who happens to be taking over the city.
He's either in a meeting or giving a speech.
Right. You get the sense that maybe it's better if he's not the mayor, because as much as we like him and know he's trying to do a good job, he's being pulled in a thousand different directions. He's only there half the time, right? He's actively, you know, it's a conflict of interest in any number of ways, right?
Yeah, so absolutely.
Maybe it's for, I think, you know, in this episode, he could barely even get his butting gear long enough to attend his own impeachment proceedings, right? So maybe it's for the best if someone, I mean, Quentin is maybe not the best guy for the job, but he's, you know, he's a good guy and he's, you know,
apparently
been learning the ropes
line,
for a little while. Well, yeah, I mean, the deputy mayor is next in line. So I mean, they'll be interesting to see. It'd be an interesting thing for his character too, if it sticks for a little while. I don't know how often elections are held. I don't know if it's consistent, like mayoral elections are every few years, or if it probably varies from city to city. I don't know, but I have to think that with everything that got Oliver impeached, that Quentin probably wouldn't stand a very good chance in mm-hmm. any sort of re-election campaign either, unless he does something incredibly amazing in his remaining time in office, because he's like, you know, you saw that in, I don't know, was trying to think who took office. Was it Ford that took office when Nixon resigned?
I don't recall. Oh, man.
Was Ford reelected? Anyway, I'm trying to think if there's historical precedent for someone who took office because the previous guy was completely disgraced, and yet to not have that new incumbent leader be stuck with the weight of their predecessor's disgraces around their neck and unable to be reelected, you know?
Right.
It seems to me that would be more often than not what would happen. Because how much can you really do in the remainder of your term to distance yourself from the policies and failures of your predecessor,
mm-hmm.
who up until the previous day you were completely 100% on board with, right there beside him and all the publicity shots and everything, right?
Right.
So I don't know. But yeah, no, I really enjoy this one.
Yeah. I did too. Well, that's all our shows, right?
That's all of our shows.
Wow. So if you have any feedback for us, we have an email address, mailbag@smartspodcast.com. Our website is www.smartspodcast.com. Our Twitter handle is @smartspodcast. And on Facebook, it's facebook.com/smartspodcast. And do you have a funny sound for us?
Bebo.